listening to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 99, and I am your host, DJ Chuang. And on this episode, you'll hear my conversation with Natalie Aho, who is a communications specialist with a number of years working as an educator and a consultant and several media channels for the Associated Baptist Press, the Alabama Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, and the Center for Healthy Churches. And with her years of experience, we talk about how communication has developed and how social media can be better applied in the context of a congregation and a community. And she also is part of a conference coming up in October for those of you within driving distance of North Carolina, a one-day conference in three locations called Paper Churches in a Digital World. Check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net for links and information. Here is my conversation with Natalie Aho. Welcome, Natalie Aho, to the Social Media Church Podcast. She is all the way cross country in North Carolina, and here I am in Orange County. So glad you could join me for a conversation about social media.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great. So share with our listeners, how did you get into social media and working with church leaders?
Well, I'm married to a pastor, and he likes all things new and shiny. And so a lot of what I picked up organically is just from sitting in the living room next to him, learning what's popular, what he's testing. My background is actually elementary education, and I ended up the short story in a desk job with a state organizational group, the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship of North Carolina. And that was around 2006. If you remember what was happening digitally then, Facebook was just becoming accessible to the public. Organizations and churches were starting to think, maybe we need websites that are attractive and do more than just have our name and address. I had the opportunity because of that position to try out redesigning the website two or three times in the 5 years I was there, started testing out social media. Of course, I'm thinking from that position of how do I reach the pastors across the state and how do I connect with them? But a lot of what I was thinking about having, you know, what I would do is what pastors think about and connecting with their community and their congregation. When I left that job, we moved to Mobile, Alabama for a temporary position for 3 years. And I thought, I really like this work and I want to figure out how I can do this as a career. One of my journeys was going back and getting my master's in interactive media. And the whole time that I'm doing this program, I keep thinking about all of this frontier thinking that the business world and the news world is doing, and the churches aren't even talking about it, much less realizing how it's passing them by. And so I started doing some work. I threw my name out to everyone I knew from my previous job and said, I'm doing consulting work now. I'm, you know, want to be of help to the organization. And then that morphed into being a help to pastors themselves and churches themselves. And then I started doing presentations. In 2011, I did a tour in 12 cities, up and down the East Coast, mostly some in the South, and probably met with roughly around 600 ministers all together, and did a round one of communication. At that time, a lot of those ministers still needed convincing that they should even think about a Facebook profile, much less a page. And a lot's changed since 2011. So, you know, now I approach it from the perspective of everyone has at least dabbled in it, but do they really actually know what they're doing with it when they're in it?
Yeah, let's drill down a little bit on your experience there. So you were working with a denominational fellowship, and what was the scope of that? How many churches did that cover? How many pastors did that cover? And how did you start your engagement with them?
Well, the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship is a movement. It's not a denominational body, but it's a loosely organized group of Baptists who aren't Southern Baptist, basically. And in the state of North Carolina, we had roughly about 300 congregations that were all associated with this group. They already had some communication structure set up when I took the job. So, you know, they had captured email addresses for most of these folks. We had a mailing address, but, you know, that was about the extent of any sort of communication they were doing. And so I started thinking about what does it mean to connect with a congregation beyond a minister? You know, if you know much about denominational work, the connection to a person who's going to live and stay in that city and love that church is a lot different than a minister who's there for 5 to 7 years and moves out of state or, you know, moves within the state, but to a completely different position. And so we started trying to do more communication with the congregation itself. But also my relationship with the pastors was interesting because, I needed there needed to be a way that I could listen and hear what their issues were, what they were concerned about, what did they need from our organization. You know, it's one thing to, and I think this applies a lot to a church secretary as well. It's one thing to just think about what kind of message am I trying to send that's important to me, either as this staff person or representing my organization, that we think everyone wants to hear, versus how can I actually be an advocate for my organization while engaging with people who may not even know who we are and figuring out what our correlation is in ministry in the state, you know, in missions. How can we be of help and of service? And a lot changes in the way that you approach communication when you think about it as a two-way street. And, you know, what do I gain by getting to know these ministers and learning who they are and, you know, what they need versus me just telling them, hey, you need to come to this and we think it's important for you. And that, you know, that relates to directly to the church because all we've known how to do for years is shout our message. And we're not really good at sitting down and listening to what our own congregation needs and what our community needs. And the blessing of the change of communication with, you know, social media is that two-way street is open wide up. And, you know, if we use platforms like Twitter just to listen, we can learn a lot about the people that are right there beside us. And they're not even necessarily speaking directly to us. We can overhear the conversations that they're having in a way that we didn't have access to do, you know, even 6 or 7 years ago.
And looking just in my own history with churches, traditionally churches communicate through print and other media. Looking to invite people to their events and their worship services, and then they produce a bulletin and maybe a occasional newsletter to tell about the activities and life in the church. And that's mm-hmm. about it. And then now with social media, just like you described, it's a two-way street. And how do you help in your training? How have you helped churches to rethink that and to be willing to invest time and money to listening and engaging those conversations?
But it's hard. you know, when I started my presentations in 2011, I felt like I had to do a lot of convincing that it was worth the time. You know, that probably the number one comment I would hear was, you know, all I see the purpose of Facebook is talking about what people had for dinner, and I don't have time for that. And yet helping them to allow for their own, you know, time, but also for the church to see what they do online as valuable. So giving them permission that they can consider and start thinking about ministry as something that happens when they're on their computer or their smartphones or their tablets, to help them to see that, you know, it's equivalent to you meeting up with someone in a coffee shop and spending 30 minutes or an hour with that person and getting to know what's going on in their life. The difference, of course, is now it's these fast flowing snippets, you know, that are flying by and the person may not even be necessarily talking directly to you. But I've never heard a pastor say that it was a waste of time to do home visits, or that, you know, it was a waste of their time to have to go and meet with someone, or, you know, a family came to visit and, man, I've got to call them and follow up. Pastors, you know, it's just ingrained in them to understand the necessity of those kinds of connections. And so any kind of conversation we can have that can flip it on its head and help them realize that the computer used to just be this delivery system for what we needed to, you know, transfer our own thoughts and words, and how we now have moved to it being a conversational piece and a connection and a way to engage. Sometimes I do that with, you know, drawing from some of the resources I received in getting my degree. I was introduced to a wealth of people who think about this, some of it from a cultural perspective, but not necessarily religious. Some people who think about this from a business perspective, you know, marketing and content strategy. A lot of people who are thinking about this from the news perspective. I studied people like Clay Shirky, who writes on the culture of change that's happening online. And so I'll bring that into conversation to say, look, you know, here's someone who's just taken a step back and said, how has the world changed in the last 10 years and where is it going? And can we listen to someone like this and see how that's impacting our congregation and how people think and interact? Michael Wesch is a professor at Kansas State University, and he does this really great hour-long presentation to the Library of Congress on his study of the anthropology of YouTube. You know, so I talk to youth ministers and I say, you know, you want to know what youth are like today, watch Michael Wesch dissect what YouTube does to change their relationships and how they interact and engage with people. Clive Thompson, someone who's writing about culture in, you know, like magazines like Wired or, you know, for New York Times, and to hear his reflection on how the world is, you know, becoming smaller and a more of a small town feel. And so as we think about what that means for the village watching over our shoulder and helping us to live in a way that, you know, they can guide our process. Well, that correlates to the 1950s church, you know, and what it meant to, for your great grandmother to know what's going on with you because everyone knew your business all the time. You know, it's making those connections of seeing that this doesn't have to be this scary time suck waste of, you know, of thing that we do, something you see your teenagers or grandchildren doing, but something that can actually be an investment in life and community. And then of course, you know, so we pause at that point in the conversation and we say, all right, what about the boundaries and the, you know, rules and the discernment that we put on ourselves to say, you can quickly fall off that cliff and it can quickly be that place where all you do is waste time and you're not really engaging, or you're behaving in a way that you would never behave in a face-to-face relationship. And so, you know, yes, learning that there is a need for moderation and discernment, even in this world, or maybe especially in this world, you know, just like we would say with our real life relationships.
Great metaphor to lead with is home visit. And then with social media, it's the online visit. And boy, you can visit so many more people in an hour than you can when you're doing a home visit.
Exactly.
And or a phone call. And so this really is a multiplier. And if people catch a vision of that, then yes, it's worth investing in those relationships, because relationships underneath it is about conversation. And what social media is great at is facilitating those. And so as you've trained people through your roadshow and your seminars now, have you seen a pastor of a church have the lights come on and really do well with this? You have a story you can share about how they're using social media to better connect with their congregation?
I don't know. I can't think of one in particular, but maybe a multitude. You know, when I started in 2000, well, okay. When I started in 2010, a friend of mine, said, I'd love for you to come and speak on what you're learning to this group of intentional interim ministers. So this is an organization that when ministers, for most of them, when they retire, they look for churches where they can serve in the gap in between pastorates. And so I came to present to this room full, some of whom, probably, you know, 20 ministers, some of whom didn't even have computers not that they didn't bring them, but they don't even have one that they use. They don't even have an email address they can provide to me. And I'm initially talking to them from this perspective of, what is Facebook? Let me explain to you why you even need a website. And you fast forward to the conversation that I'm having now in 2014, and you know, even looking ahead at what I'm planning for 2015, even the minister who's been doing this for 25, 30 years and is thinking about retirement, or those who are coming in as intentional interim ministers, they already are experimenting in this on their own. They've either been pushed or bullied into it by their grandchildren saying, you know, I want to stay in touch with you. If you want to see pictures of your grandchildren, you've got to have a Facebook account. To, you know, realizing, having their church members come to them and say, we've got to improve our website. It's a detriment to who we are when it doesn't reflect us professionally and, you know, as a ministry. And I'm even impressed with those who try out platforms that they, you know, may not even feel like they get, you know, Google Plus or Tumblr, you know, or they're uploading Snapchat so that they can see what that means for their youth. And that's the average minister, I feel like, you know, so I no longer have a room full of ministers who don't even know what is going on in the digital world. I recently had a conversation with a rabbi in New Jersey who is approaching his the retirement at his congregation and wants to make sure he has an online presence as he moves forward to become an intentional interim minister. And he sees that partly as a resume builder, but also recognizing he now has access to a congregation that won't sit in front of him. And, you know, so to interact with this rabbi and talk about all of the things he's already figured out and what he's doing for his temple, and yet knowing that there's not really that big of a leap between what he's doing and where he needs to go in order to be, you know, a persona that people can access from wherever they live, you know, around the world.
To hear pastors now warming up to the idea of using social media, and they're willing to jump in the water and try it out. Because it takes a lot of practice to develop your voice, much less to develop your strategy. And you do some great things at digitalclergy.com to share articles and resources. And that even culminates in some live events. You've got three coming up in October in North Carolina called Paper Churches in a Digital World. And tell us about that event and how much you can help a church leader get more engaged in social media.
Sure. Well, I realized that there's a need for maybe more what you would call a round two of these conversations. You know, if the average minister is going to come in to meet with me and has already formed their own opinion now of what they think they're doing on Facebook or why they need a blog on how they're going to use it, what can I do to help, you know, move them to it becoming a strategy? You know, I want ministers to feel like what they do is organic and natural and that it is an extension of their ministry. But I also need them to understand that when they're strategic about it and they learn how to be effective on different platforms and what the different audiences expect on each platform and how they engage, that they see so much more reward for their time and their investment. And I feel like they're more likely to commit to using whichever is their favorite platform and commit to helping their congregation as a whole. You know, that it's not all dependent on their shoulders, that they can now become a unit that represents, you know, Christ in their community and around the world, however their church feels comfortable with that. You know, platform, whichever one they choose to invest in. So all that to say, I started dreaming that, you know, I really enjoy the aspect of presenting. I have a young son and, you know, my husband has taken a new job. And so I didn't want to have to travel too far. And so I thought, well, I'll start here with North Carolina. Who do I know in this area? I actually did one in South Carolina a few months ago. But I didn't really want to necessarily forge out on my own. So I contacted a friend of mine, Brian Foreman. He is mostly known for his consulting work with youth ministers. And I, you know, it's been several years since we've been out of youth ministry. And if you're not in it, it changes around you rapidly. And I wanted someone who could bring that piece to the conversation as well. If we can stay ahead of what youth are doing, then we're more likely to stay ahead of where the church will be in 5 to 10, sometimes 15 years. And so I wanted to have a voice there with me who was much more current than I am. So we dreamed up this new conference that we're doing called Paper Churches in a Digital World. Understanding, as you so adequately said, the average church still relies almost entirely on print. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, print is still one of the main ways to connect with your congregation. But are there other facets of the digital world that we can bring into our congregation? And let's even take a look at what we're doing with print and make sure we're doing it effectively and not wasting our time. So we, you know, we sneak into the conversation. I have a part where we talk about communication mistakes in general and what communication strategy means as a whole. Since most of our churches haven't thought through the fact that there is a strategy to communicating to start with. And then we talk, you know, some about the privacy and the theory behind how the world has changed. But most of our conversation is spent on the strategy of social media. And we allow that to be a very guided conversation. What are the needs of the ministers who've come in our room? And of course, you know, per the audience, we spend most of our time on Facebook, but we do talk about even the, you know, long tail of what's out there that may not be the majority of the people in their congregation, but may end up being a favorite platform for a minister. And, you know, if they can find a place where they enjoy spending time online, they'll find an audience. And so, you know, we want to make sure they have exposure to everything that's out there and help them think about what, you know, when's the right time to be on Facebook and what do they do with a post and, you know, where do they go from there?
And we'll definitely add a link to this conference in the show notes at socialmediachurch.net. And just to mention it for our audio listeners, the website for the conference is thedigitalcongregation.com. And it's coming to a location near you if you are in North Carolina or within driving distance of North Carolina to Wilmington, Greensboro, and Asheville. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what are you working on for the future? You hinted at it. How is your consulting career developing as you serve churches in so many great ways with social media?
Well, one of my main clients is actually a news organization. I work for the Associated Baptist Press, and we have a global presence and a very a wide, diverse audience, not just Baptist. And I help them think about how they spread their message online, which correlates nicely with constantly thinking about what the church is doing and how they share their message. I have recently applied for a visiting fellows position with the Nieman Foundation. They are associated with Harvard University, and they work in thinking about what is the frontier of journalism and what does that mean for news organizations. And my hope there, whether I get the fellowship or not, is to start to invest in what's the role of metrics and how does that help us in hearing receiving feedback and hearing back from the crowd and what we're doing. And then for a news organization that starts digitally, is there a role in print for print? And what can we do to move that into more of a guided conversation similar to what books are doing with book clubs? And so I think a lot about, you know, as I said, the nice correlation between that conversation and what that means for the church. You know, in many ways, whatever's happening in the news world, it's mimicking what's happening in the church. You know, probably the top two industries talking about how the, you know, sky is falling and the and everything is dying is the church and the news industry. And there's a, I think, a lot of reason for that. You know, we're both in the communication business, and we both are thinking constantly about how do we share a message with a world who may not want to hear what we have to say? How do we share it in a way that they are reciprocative of what we want them to hear. And so, you know, I we'll see if the fellowship actually comes to be, or if it's just a project I end up taking on my own. And along with that, I'm thinking a lot about what we do with our opinion section of our new site, which correlates a lot with, you know, what is the role of the blog today, and has it run its course, or is it now splintering into a million different other ways? And, you know, if we all have a blog and we all have a voice, are we really reading, you know, are we reading anything new, or are we staying in a silo? So I'm thinking a lot about what that means for my news organization, but also, you know, my number one recommendation for most pastors is to start a blog. And I need to figure out if that's still true, and if that's really the best entry point for someone who wants to start a connection with an audience. And just recently, I've been kind of percolating on this blog post about the role of the church secretary, and, you know, what has come across her desk in the last 20 years, when it went from typewriter to word processor to computer to printer, and now they have a lease on a copy machine, and how all of that is a delivery system change. But what it means now when we talk about communication strategy and online conversation and thinking about being intentional about telling our story and living our life with those around us. And that's a systems change, you know. And so what have we done with the role of the secretary, and how does that correlate to what's happening in the average church? You know, you look at church starts or the mega churches, and for the most part, they're going to hire three people first: a charismatic leader, pastor, and an energetic youth worship leader, or some sort of worship leader. And then they're going to hire a communications director or manager. And they're going to think strategically about how do they communicate with their neighborhood in bringing people in, and how do they maintain that communication once people are showing up. I don't think most churches would say that their communications person is third in line at their church. So, you know, I'm just thinking on that. I don't know if it'll develop into more than just a blog post, or if there's an article in there, or a whole series of conversation. But, you know, it's important that we take a step back and look at where we've come from and make sure we know where it is we want to go.
That is some profound insight. And I'll confirm that I'm starting to hear that too from other church leaders, that the role and the value of a communication director is bubbling up on the priority list for what churches really need to have in the 21st century. One last question. And this week we just heard the big Apple announcement with iPhone and Apple Pay and iWatch. How do you think that will affect the church?
You know, we almost did a giveaway for a watch with my news organization this summer, and I spent a lot of time looking at where that industry was going. You know, obviously the makers of the digital watch knew something was happening with Apple just based on some of the changes they were making leading up to this fall's announcement. You know, essentially it all dives into this larger conversation of the Internet of Things and the fact that we're starting to see the communication platforms infiltrate everything that we do. I hope that that means that as we start to think about, oh, how does this affect my refrigerator, or, you know, when I go for a run, or what I do in my car, that can only be good news for the church, because if we're thinking about it in all our other areas of life, maybe we'll finally start to think about what that means for the church. You know, you have those few churches out there that took the leap and said, well, maybe we should have a kiosk when people come in and it's a welcome center. Some churches have recognized the need for some sort of digital giving platform in their lobby, or, you know, in their foyer of their church, or some, you know, some way to make those connections. I think that it's going to push us to start to think beyond our traditional spaces where do we allow the internet to infiltrate, and where are the places that we need to keep sacred, and that we want to say, it's okay for us to say this is a space where we don't have digital conversation. Mm. And what does that mean when we actually decide that together as a community, instead of it being a top-down decision that, you know, one person says will be the need of our congregation? So I'm hopeful. I'm grateful that we have innovative companies like Apple and Google and Amazon, that are pushing us to constantly think about what's next. And I think that it helps when our ministers listen, even if they don't buy the gadgets, that they listen to what these companies are doing and how they're trying to engage, with, us having a note of caution of saying, well, we're not a business and we never want to go down that road of it being all about marketing and all about PR. But what can we learn from them that they're doing the right, that they've figured out how to do the right way with their audience, that we can take away from that and say, this is something that we can apply to what we do and what we love and how we want to change the world.
Well, thank you, Natalie Aho, for joining me on the conversation with at Social Media Church Podcast. Godspeed and blessing to you as you continue to serve the church in so many ways.
Thank you, DJ. I appreciate it. It's been a great time to talk with you.
Thank you, Natalie Aho, for talking with me on the Social Media Church Podcast. Check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net for links and how you can connect with Natalie. Check her resources out at Digital Clergy, as well as the 3 1-day events in North Carolina that if you are within driving distance, you'll want to see if you can drop in and get some valuable encouragement, as well as a framework for how to think about using social media within your context that helps to nurture and connect with your congregation and community. This week has been an interesting week in the top-level domain world. For those of you that may not be aware, or you've kind of heard a little bit about it, it's not yet in the mainstream conscious that over 1,000 new top-level domains are being launched this year and next year. Domain extensions like .club and .google and .walmart are on the horizon. Actually, .club is launched. .xyz is another one that's really popular at the moment. Last count I looked, over 300 have been launched. And that means there's at least 700 more in the pipeline being launched for big brands into the future. And this week in particular has been one that I watched closely because it was the early access program of .church. So .church domain names were being sold at a premium for this first week, kind of like a fast pass or a HOV lane. We pay a little extra to get in front of the line. Well, almost over 400 as of day 5 of that week have registered domain names at a premium. And since I'm releasing this podcast on Monday evening, and if you happen to listen to this before Wednesday morning, you'll want to prepare, if you want to get a .church domain name, you'll want to prepare to log in to your favorite registrar, see if they have a .church domain extension that they're supporting and selling, and promptly at 9 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday morning, September 17th. And for those of you on the East Coast and North Carolina, that would be September 17th, promptly at 12 p.m. noon Eastern time is when the floodgates will open and anybody and everybody around the country and around the world can get a .church domain name for under $40. And depending on a registrar, your price may vary somewhere in the range of $30 to $40. There's well over 100 registrars out there. I'll add a link in the show notes So you can see if your registrar that you already get domain names from is carrying the .church domain names, and then you can get one and have a meaningful domain names from before the .dot and after the .dot for your church. And as I just mentioned, over 400 have already registered. I am anticipating well over 1,000, maybe even 2,000 will have been registered before this week is out, this early access registration period. So by September 17th at 9 a.m. Pacific time, we should be seeing quite a number of .church domain names registered and beginning to be deployed and in use. And there's a real possibility that churches could be the pioneers in this new GTLD program, GTLD standing for Generic Top Level Domains. Of the couple hundred that have already launched, they're not yet in mainstream conscious, but the church is such a unique place because hundreds and thousands of people gather on a weekly basis to connect with one another and to hear the word of God. There's no other community like that. And so these .church domain names, as they get into circulation and use for these faith communities all around the country and all around the world, it will be like a light into the darkness, a light upon a hill, that these new top-level domains are becoming a part of the digital reality. And so, personal disclosure, I work for a top-level registry that is preparing to launch .bible, and that's another top-level domain that would be of great interest to you as my listeners here as church leaders talking about social media, and certainly the internet and domain names are a part of that conversation. So consider how a meaningful domain name that is distinct from the generic .com or .net and .org can better communicate and better connect to those who are part of your church community as well as those in your community and even around the world. I mean, it opens up huge opportunities for innovation, and that is what this new top-level domain program is all about. Opening up new opportunities and opening up innovation for the new digital world. We're in the 21st century already, well into 2014, 2015, just around the corner. So I encourage you to consider that as a strategic move for accelerating your digital engagement with the world. Again, the show notes are there online at socialmediachurch.net. And I'll give you a hint. Yes, I am looking to get a .church domain name that would match the name of this podcast. But until I get it, I'm not going to say that what it is. But it will be very apt for this podcast. I'm hoping to get it without paying the premium. But boy, if someone else gets it on the premium, I will be notably disappointed. And I'll let you know what happens on the next episode. Thank you so much. If you are joining us for the first time or for the 100th time, thank you for being a great listener and subscriber. If you're not a subscriber yet, you can subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or any podcatcher that you prefer to use on your Android device or other smartphone or desktop devices. That's all I've got for this episode. My name is DJ Chuang. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me. I hope you're blessed, and I'd love to hear from you too. Drop me a line using your favorite social media channel. All the links and buttons are there at socialmediachurch.net. And until next time, we'll stay connected online.